Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our spoiler-free review for Neja 2. He's not exactly your average kid. Welcome to the Geekcentric Podcast. My name is Nate, and this is our spoiler-free review for Neja 2. An epic-sized thanks to our friends at Touchwood PR and A24 for inviting us out to see this movie early for review. If you're joining us for the first time, we are Geekcentric, a podcast celebrating the world of movies, TV shows, games, and all things Geekcentric. Today, I'm joined by a Chaos Pearl and a Demon Orb, both destined for greatness. First up, he's Justin. The Jade Lotus Long Gong Lovin' Lawrence.
Long Gong?
I'm a dragon. I got
yes,
you.
That's right.
Not because I have a long gong.
Oh my gosh. How many seconds in are we? What is it? Less than a minute? Oh my goodness. Jeepers. And like, I thought this movie had enough toilet humor, and yet, you know, here you are.
Hey, there's never enough potty humor. In my opinion, it's a dying art. It's a dying art. It's a dying humor. You know, I'm here for it. Thank you very much, Chinese cinema.
Well, I'm happy you have the platform to discuss it. But listen, from the deep depths of the Dragon Den, he's Darcy, the dutiful deity, the harmonious and heavenly Hudson.
From the Dragon Den? Did we watch the same movie?
I mean, you kind of would fit in there, I think. You could hang out with those dragons.
Yeah, but the heavenly part, I feel like, wouldn't apply to dragons. I mean, they got something against it based on that first
movie. All depends on your perspective, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Right? How's it going, guys? We're talking about the sequel to Neja. This movie, Justin, how many billions of monies has this movie made so far?
It's like, I think, I'm not sure how much, but
it's close
it's already
to two?
Yes, it's the highest grossing animated film of all time. I think that's the running tag, if I'm not mistaken, on some of these notes that we've received in regards to this film.
Yeah.
Quick little Google, 2.2 billion and counting.
2.2 billies. That is huge. That is that's a massive improvement over that original film, obviously, with this one getting a wider release now thanks to A24 and this English dub. It's only gonna keep making more, I guess.
Yeah, it's been labeled as the world's top grossing animated film of all time, and it is the fifth highest grossing film worldwide, whatever
that means.
So it beat Inside Out, Pixar's Inside Out 2, which came in at 1.7 billion. So it's not like this movie needs to make any more money, apparently.
Apparently.
But here we are.
I think if anything, from a success standpoint, and no matter what we sort of talk about in terms of our feelings, and we've already talked a little bit about the movie before coming into this review, but no matter what, I think it is something to be applauded and celebrated to see a movie like this gain such popularity in the West, and I think it's just going to keep on growing.
Yeah, I think a lot of the popularity is more global. I think it's found its way into the Western market now, especially with this dubbed version. We know people who have seen the non-dubbed version before the Western markets have gotten this new version. But to your point, I think what's really great is that we're seeing another area of the world kind of dabble in animated film and really show up in all the right places for really being, you know, something that is, you know, groundbreaking to a certain degree, but also stays narratively true to their own cultural representation and their own stories that they want to tell, which I think is obviously something that we can all appreciate about animation and what animation can bring is this idea of this marriage of you know, technique with storytelling. And I think that, yeah, this is Neja 2 is obviously an excellent example of that, just because of how much love it's been getting for this achievement of just being so so epic in scale and you know, so immersive in its animation. It's quite stunning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to talk about the visuals and the epicness and you know, everything that we enjoyed or maybe didn't enjoy with the film. But I did want to just sort of mention, you know, I think we're seeing a broader push of these stories being brought over to the West. I know, Darcy, you and I really enjoyed American Born Chinese before it was unceremoniously canceled. And then we also have, especially in the video game space right now, with Wukong and mm-hmm. Wuchang Fallen Feathers. And, you know, we've kind of been seeing this push for, as you're saying, Justin, like, we're seeing the Chinese people celebrated and celebrating their culture and giving us projects from them made by them. And it's, yeah. I think it's great. I think it's
stories from them, by them, and in all the right ways.
And not just like we're seeing China done by people who aren't Chinese. Right.
Right. But yeah. I think the market wants more of that. Like not just China, but like just people want to see stories from other cultural perspectives. And I think this is just another example of that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool that, again, you mentioned Black Myth: The Sun Wukong, and again, a lot of anime are inspired by Journey to the West being one mm-hmm. of the biggest pieces of Asian literature. So seeing an opportunity for another massive piece of literature from the East getting a chance to shine in the animated platform is a really cool time, and I'm all for it.
totally. Well, let's get into our thoughts on this movie, starting off with the synopsis here. A rebellious young boy, Neja, is feared by the gods and born to immortal parents with wild, uncontrolled powers. Now, he's faced with an ancient force intent on destroying humanity. He must grow up to become the hero the world needs. Directed by Zhao Ji and starring Academy Award winner Michelle Yeoh, Vincent Rodriguez III, Alex Lee, Damien Haas, and Crystal Lee. Neja's English dub releases in theaters across the U.S., Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, August 22nd, 2025. So I think, you know, this is, we love animation here on the Geekcentric podcast. It's one of our favorite sort of mediums in terms of storytelling and for great reasons. And I think this movie, definitely when it comes to animation, we can use the word, let's get it all out of the way right away. We'll say spectacle. put that on your Geekcentric bingo card, mark that one off. But it really is. It truly is some of the best sort of visual, sort of action combat sequences, massive scale sort of sequences that I've ever seen in a movie in terms of just that sort of depth and color and just the details that are there. It's massive is the best way to explain it.
Yeah, I think we should also mention we saw this in IMAX, which was breathtaking. I think the scale, the clarity, the vibrancy made every detail pop. And the animation, like you were saying, it's a next level of like polish that rivals Pixar to some degrees. Like I think the detailing in the landscapes are so rich. And there's just layered with lovely lighting, and I think the character animation is detailed down to like the textures of skins and fabrics, and I don't know, it was all great. The hair movement in specific parts and just little details in the sort of facial micro expressions I thought were spot on. So I think that, yeah, this is, again, as we were saying leading into this, you know, the animation from this film is really the big celebratory part of it, in my opinion. And mm-hmm. we'll talk about story when we get there, but I feel like this is such a groundbreaking achievement for, you know, again, another studio that is not in the US, that isn't funded by big money, that is, you know, Disney, that is able to produce this high level a quality of animation with such fidelity to it. Like it's absolutely stunning work.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you compare it to the first one. I mean, it was only 5 or 6 years ago, but the leaps and bounds they've made in animation.
Feels like it was 10 years based on the technical differences, right? Yeah.
The jump is astonishing. The particle effects they have going on, and for all the different effects, the fighting, just the water, like you said, those breathtaking landscapes feel like they've just increased the effort put into them so much, and it pays off because I'm going to say it too. It is a spectacle to behold the entire time. Just so many of these scenes are just so full of color in life that it jumps off the screen.
You guys are stealing my word, man.
Oh yeah.
I wear spectacles and I speak about spectacles.
Hey, I wear spectacles too, man. So
hey, bro, okay, you know what, fine, we'll share the word.
Okay. All right. And I'm just gonna keep saying it's epic in scale, but no, it's
no. You gotta use bombastic. You're bombastic.
And you know what?
Just Mr. Bombastic.
Just when you think that's a great impression of Boss Nass. Just when you think though that this movie can't get more bombastic, it finds a way over and over and over again. And I will say though, like you were mentioning those small details, Justin, the movie wastes no time in trying to sort of showcase very quickly, like within the first few seconds, like, look at these details. Look how we've elevated even just the way the hair looks in this film from the first one. But then it zooms out so far. You're seeing entire villages decimated at times, cities crumbling, mountains, you know, exploding, and entire lands getting destroyed. And there are some sequences from a perspective of like seeing just multiple characters on screen that rival like the Lord of the Rings or Dune mm-hmm. Part Two, mm-hmm. where there's sometimes like upwards of thousands of characters on screen. And it's bombastic. It's something you need to see on an IMAX screen, just so you can kind of take in how much is actually on the screen. It's mind-boggling to think that people made it. And that's the crazy part. And that's one of the beauties of animation.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, there's cheating techniques there. You know, they probably repeat patterns, repeat characters, make them smaller, make them, you know, and just kind of scatter them throughout. But yeah, I think again, the scale and scope of this film was massive. It had like Avengers Endgame, you know, style. Lord of the Rings, I guess, is a much better example, actually. Lord of the Rings Return of the King level sort of final battle-esque style, where it's just like people are looking so freaking small and you're like, damn, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people fighting a lot of people.
To the point where it zooms out and they look like flower petals, like for flying sure.
There was one interesting scene where it was like all of these soldiers are like stacked in like what must be like a hive, and then they all just fly out like bees. And I was like, it kind of like there's some symbolism there that I think is really interesting, but at the same time, they were so small. Yeah. It was just there was like thousands, like it looked like millions of them, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the other area of you know where the animation really does shine is in the camera movement and the choreography. The action sequences flow with an unbelievably fluid camera that just sweeps and spins and tracks through battles in ways that feel impossible in live action in some ways, right? Like that's what I love about fight choreography in animation, is that the camera can go places that live action cameras can't. And I think more live action stunt choreography is they're trying to push the boundaries and really weave in more of a intimate fight approach with handheld and like, you know, POV style. But the way the camera whips with weapons or with feet and hands and blocks and all sorts of things, it's absolutely incredible. And I think the fight choreography just feels so intricately planned, like a dance. And I've talked about this before in the past with both live action and animation, that there's just this dance like mentality that flows with the way the camera moves and the fighting moves. And I think it's just blending this martial arts precision with, here it comes, animated spectacle, you know.
For sure. Well, and I just think too, like to that point, with a live action combat sequence, you can't really strap a high quality camera to the bottom of someone's foot, right? But in this, you can literally, the audience, the entire theater can be flying along the bottom of Neja's foot as he's kicking, you know, some demon in the face or something like that. And speaking of the demons, I did want to bring up one last thing for the visuals for myself, which is the character design. I think has to be applauded in this. I love a good animal person. So some of these demon anthropomorphic characters, we got the big shark guy or the big octopus guy or the marmot, you know, characters with clubs and stuff like that. And they've all got these very specifically designed like clothes and outfits and armor and all that stuff just brought me back to, you know, being a kid again and seeing just some of the most phenomenal, you know, designs in terms of these anthropomorphic. It brought me back to, and I'm so sad to not fully remember the name of this, but there was like this kangaroo live action movie, martial arts movie from, if you know what I'm talking about, please write in and remind me. But it brought me back to sort of seeing some of those designs in terms of just the way that these characters looked and just how like sort of unique they were. And I really enjoyed the look of the world of Nezhatu.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. There's a lot of thought and effort to make these characters feel unique and feel like something we haven't seen before as these demons or otherworldly creatures. And again, just the level of detail they go to make them, again, define the identities of these characters that you're not getting much from as they're getting kicked in the face by Neja or something like that. But the idea and the thought is there, and then you can easily see it in every scene. And it's again, the characters are one of the highlights in this movie for me, I think.
Just really quickly, Warriors of Virtue is the name of the thing I was referencing. So I just wanted to quickly shout that out. But
nice. Well, yeah. I think the last thing I wanted to call out for just sort of look and feel is the sound and music. I think the epic orchestral swells and the traditional Chinese instrumentation really worked well. There was also some really fun metal and, you know, other music that kind of like really hinted at sort of more of like the, I guess the sort of pop culture references, but there was a really beautiful orchestral score that was kind of laid in that was very traditional with its Chinese instrumentation. And I also think just the sound designs, especially in IMAX, like it was, this thing was fucking loud.
The sound design was freaking out. It was it's too loud where you are.
The sound design, I think, really just punctuates the action. You get a lot of weight behind the impacts. Also, just like in some cases, sort of like the environmental ambience, like just what you're hearing in some of those spaces, and just the sort of magical effects. Like it made every moment feel very much alive in its own way.
Yeah, yeah, and fleshed out this world from a visual standpoint for sure. Now, in terms of performances, you know, we're working with an English dub cast this time around versus, you know, the previous release of this film, which was all in Mandarin. So I wanted to kind of throw it to both of you. Were there any performances from this cast that stood out to you?
I mean, I got to shout out Damien Haas being a big Smosh fan forever. Woo! Basically. It's nice to see him popping up more now. He's a talented voice actor, and I think this movie shows as a whole how they improved from the first one, where they took a bit more time choosing this voice cast to really give proper performances as opposed to just reading lines or translating a movie like the first one felt like. So I will say across the board, I think it was all great, but just hearing Damien in a major speaking role twice this year was pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't have anyone written down. I just kind of generally wrote about the performances, and I think that there's a good mix of emotional depth with also some comedic moments. Some of the timing wasn't always the best, I feel like. Again, that just might be lost in translation moment, you know, West East meets West, like understanding the difference in that. But I think overall the voices struck a balance between being, you know, having a sense of mythic gravitas while also feeling relatable and having personality. So I think that, yeah, like that was what the first one lacked for me in a lot of ways, was that it just felt like that dub was just people there to sort of do the voices, and they added some inflection and some character things, but it felt a little overdone at times. But here I feel like there was more attention to those performances and them actually being performances.
Yeah, I think it was one of those things where when we all watched Neja 1 you know, last night as of this recording before we went to go see the sequel. And I will say I do think the performances, like you're saying, they are better. They're definitely more performative. I thought with the talent of like Vincent Rodriguez, Michelle Yeoh, Damien Haas on board, like I thought that we would get sort of dialogue that might sort of fit a little bit better, which is maybe on me for thinking that, because they're not the ones necessarily writing, they're just performing, they're working with what they were given, right? And I understand completely that when you're working within something that's already established animation, I have no there's nothing in me that thinks it's a small feat to have to fit lines of dialogue translated over into sequences that don't actually fit the English language necessarily. But I will say I was hoping that the dialogue would work a little bit better for me than it did in this movie. I think it does work better than the first one, but it just didn't quite hit for me the way I wanted it to. But I think that's also another thing where it's like, you know, I really wanted this movie to kind of go against the tried and true rule of always watch the movie subbed, not dubbed. I just don't think this one is a compelling argument for that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I watched a couple. I was rattling with this, right? Because again, I love the cast, and I do think that they did a better job. But I when we got home, I put on a few scenes from this movie that were just online that you can find that are in the original Mandarin, and they are significantly better. But I can also understand from a first viewing standpoint, this is a movie you want to watch with your eyes on all parts of the screen, not just the part at the bottom. So if you are fluent in Mandarin, then no problem there. But for Western audiences coming into this, I think dubbed is the only way you can watch it a first time, and then maybe a second time. I would recommend watching it subbed, because those scenes that I watched online are significantly better in terms of just the things that they're saying, the words that they're actually coming out there. They flow better. They're much more poetic. It just worked better overall. So again, I know that's not the movie we're necessarily reviewing, but I would recommend for people in the West and for people listening to this podcast, maybe watch the movie, enjoy the beautiful visuals, but then maybe go back and rewatch it subbed, because I know I want to. But let's kind of get into the story and the pacing for this movie. You know, this movie is it's a big story, and so I wanted to throw it to each of you to let me know, what did you think of the story and the pacing for this film?
Yeah, it's overstuffed, in my opinion. I think, but at the core, there's a real simplicity to it, and it took me a bit of time to kind of grapple with this. But you know, I think at its heart, this is a very simple story about light and dark, and how each can be influenced and tempted and shaped by one another. Hmm. And I think it's also about the question of who gets to decide someone else's fate, whether it's determined by who they are, where they came from, or the choices they make. And that to me is a very great message and a great story to kind of build into this. However, it is overstuffed in its execution. While the core is very straightforward, the film just piles on so many subplots and characters and lore and exposition and details that just make it feel bloated and in some ways really confusing to really find a way to know what you are tracking. And, you know, I think some story beats are layered in a way that risk losing audiences. And I think audiences that are going to be new to this, right? I think, again, if we are taking a film like this and bringing it to the Western market, I think some things here are going to lose the audience, especially younger viewers. I'm not sure how kids are really going to take this in, if they're really going to understand it or just really be like, wow, look, it looks so cool.
Yeah.
It's dense and very, very often confusing, making me wonder how any kid is supposed to follow this movie. But I think despite the clutter and the moral and philosophical sort of undertone and things that they're kind of tapping into remain strong, and they're very thought provoking, especially for an older audience. And, you know, we are an older audience, and I think that, you know, we can pull away some of these elements, but I think its execution overall is very overstuffed and just a little too bloated.
Mm-hmm. I think my biggest issue is, like, while you said it's got great themes and underlying messages that will be timeless. I mean, I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. My issue is that they're the same themes that they explored in the first movie, and they didn't really change much, even the way they explored them, to the point where some of the final act plot points or moments they go through are almost recreated shot for shot. And it seems a bit confusing to do that with a direct sequel like 2. I'm wondering if this was because they have a larger audience, or like, let's tell a story or hit those points again for our larger audience. I just, again, right off the heels of that first one, it left me disappointed. Like, you could have taken it further. You could have gone in a new direction with these themes, but they just did the same old story in a new fantastic way. So yeah, bit of a letdown in my opinion.
It almost feels like, to the point where, like, if this movie was released, like you said, Justin, 10 years later, this would be a reboot call. But it's only been since 2019.
That's what I was going to say, though. I think, to the point of what you're saying, is I think they're taking what they did in the first one and recycling it for this one. But because they now have more money and a bigger budget and maybe more time, because this movie is longer than the first one, surprisingly, like, it was over 2 hours. I think it's safe to say that they are taking some of those themes and recycling it again, and then playing with some of those themes and changing them again. And this does feel, like you said, Nate, like a reboot quill. Is that the proper
term? That's the term in Hollywood.
Yeah. The reboot. It feels like a reboot quill that is made to fully take on the animation that it's able to use and leverage and really tell a story. Cause it did feel like it was going more emotional beat, more serious with some elements versus Neja, the first Neja movie, where it feels like some of it was just a little more like, that felt like a kid's movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, that first one. So
that one felt like Neja 1, I had written down like slightly like earlier DreamWorks animation for a TikTok generation is what it felt like. It felt like I was swiping from moment to moment to moment. And with this one, I think it's interesting because I think it's yes, the themes of like charting your own path, encouraging people to be comfortable in the body they have. There's elements of unconditional love, and then, like, you know, the importance of recognizing that love before it's too late, or like classism and judgment, and all those things that you were mentioning, Justin. I think all of those elements could hit harder if they could have just stuck to a central plot. Mm-hmm. Where this feels like it does in a better way than the first one. It does take some moments to sit down and sort of say, okay, let's focus on the emotion here. But unfortunately, there's just like 15 different plots in this film. And to your point of it feeling overstuffed, I just feel like this is, outside of the visuals, this is a jack of all trades, master of none situation, right? Where within the 2 hours and 23 minutes, it feels like they were like, well, we can't leave out that plot line. Oh, that's I love that from the original source material. That we have to have that part too. And I'm just like, this realistically, a lot of this could have been in a third, fourth, fifth Neja film, but it's all here. And Darcy, you were saying as we came out of the theater, something that we normally wouldn't say about a one to a two, especially within such a short period of time. But you were saying that you thought that it was worse that we had actually watched Neja 1.
Yes, and I think of that, a lot of it comes from the fact that we're getting those story beats that the first time watching it, especially if it would be in the Neja 2, you'd be blown away by the visuals, and then those story beats would feel fresh and new. But coming off of the first one where they did it in the earlier animation, didn't land as well. And then when you get it a second time, you're like, well, they're just recycling it now. And it left me wanting more. If it, like the way they upped the animation, they couldn't up some of the storytelling beats and stuff. I don't know.
Well, and even when it comes to the humor, and I wanted to kind of ask both of you, what did you think of the humor this time around? The fart jokes, the poop jokes, the puke jokes.
I think this falls in the same camp of anime humor. Like, anime humor is very specific to the culture of Japan and East Asia, maybe in general, but probably just Japan. Again, me being ignorant, not really understanding all of it, but we understand that like jokes are more culturally specific, right? Like a joke that happens that we say here or that makes sense here won't make sense somewhere else in the world. And I think the same goes for some of the humor and its execution. I also think it was tailored for kids. There were some fart jokes, there were some pukey jokes, and
really gross stuff,
gross stuff. And then there was some like, you know, there was no like sort of erotic jokes or anything like that, but everything felt tamed, and it felt like it was literally just more of the humor of the culture at that time, or of this generation, sort of, you know, laughing at fart jokes, if you will.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I found that the humor, yeah, for some of it, it landed for me. Other times it didn't. Again, I think that, like you're saying, Justin, could just be from our cultural perspective, or just the fact that we are 30 plus year old men who are watching an animated film that sure. is geared toward a younger audience. Sure. Some of the jokes aren't meant for us, and that's okay. I think I think it was more palatable than the first one, because I will say the first one was a bit over the top, and mm-hmm. some of those jokes were story points, where in this movie they felt more just like they're a joke while the story was happening, as opposed to being a crucial point of the story.
I would be interested to sort of check in with younger audiences on this movie, though, to sort of see, like, is that the kind of humor that kids
but
want
I, again,
these days? Or is it just
where are you
going
to go? Are you
going
to go to China and ask,
correct,
are you
going
to go to
exactly.
China and ask those kids? Or are you going to ask kids here and be like,
right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, are kids yeah. here even going to watch this movie and be like, I don't know what the fuck this is all about. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's sure. the other part, that this yeah. is a real... It's a real gamble for them to push it into the U.S. market. And a lot of the reason why they're pushing it into the U.S. market, I think, is also for it to be considered for best animated feature at the Oscars. And I think it definitely will be in that.
I think it'll
category.
Be nominated for
yeah,
sure.
For sure. It'll definitely yeah. be nominated. And it could win, right? Just on the scale of how massive it was in China and in the East Asian market. So, but you know, you guys were mentioning before, you know, they didn't go nearly as focused on the story. They went more focused on the animation. And, you know, we were talking about spectacle, you know, brings up James Cameron. It's got that James Cameron effect, right? It literally is really focusing on the animation, the spectacle, giving a reason for all of those things to exist in this film, right? So for there to be conflict, for there these fights to exist, and all of that to be seen, you know, that's the story. It, you would think that it's the animation that's servicing the story, but it's really the story that's trying to make purpose of the animation and like give purpose to it and kind of forcibly put us in the situation where we are getting these epic, drawn out, at times felt like Dragon Ball Z epic, like, you know, like just slow burn emotional moments with like battle moments that are just like so drawn out. It's like, finish the guy already. Come on. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, you know, and that just might be, again, coming back to it, a cultural thing of how stories are represented or experienced in, you know, in this market, in the East Asian market. Right. So, yeah, that was my note on what you guys were saying in regards to that.
For sure. Yeah, there's definitely, I think you already said it before, Justin, but definitely feels like there's some elements that are lost in translation.
For sure.
You know, between the different markets. But let's get to our final thoughts and score for this movie, which we're going to be rating on a scale of 1 to 5 immortality pills. And I'm going to throw it over to Darcy to kick us off.
Yeah, well, like I think we said, like, if you want to go see this movie, see it in IMAX for the visual effects, because it's incredible. It's a sight to behold, and all the ways that they're bringing these massive scale battles and these incredibly emotional moments to life. Where the movie falls short, in my opinion, is the overstuffs and rehashing of a story that we kind of already got in the first film. If you haven't seen that first one, don't bother seeing it, because you'll get a nice recap at the beginning of this one, and a lot of these story beats will land for the first time a lot harder, I think. Again, the dialogue, I think, was lacking. Like we said, I think that is more just the translation issues, trying to fit certain amount of story into the time they have these characters talking without it looking weird. So I forgive it. Again, I am always a sub over dub guy. So I think this movie just kind of reinforces that, in my opinion. But as a whole, I had a decent time with this movie. It was a cool visual sight to behold, and it was really neat exploring more Asian culture and literature through this animated medium. So for that reason, I'll be giving Neja 2 3 out of 5 immortality pills.
All righty. Justin.
Yeah, I'm with my buddy over here, Darcy. I think Neja 2 is it's a visual powerhouse. You know, seeing it in IMAX is an experience in itself. you know, with the animation quality, that again, it just felt like it was on the same level, if not a little bit more elevated at times. And maybe it's just because it is more fight choreography than Pixar. You know what I mean? Like, it still had that like cutesy clean look to it, but like it was so much more elevated for a more mature audience. I think the camera work that flows, like choreographed dance is perfect, and the sound design was incredible. I think the performances, yeah, they worked for me, and I love the point that you guys said, like, we are watching this version for the first time with dubbed. I would like to have seen this subbed, as you guys were mentioning, but I think the voice performances, they worked. And you know, at its core, I think the story is just it's simple yet powerful. You know, a tale about light and dark, fate and choice, and the way those forces can influence each other. But the execution of this movie, and at times it's just sorry, but the execution is overstuffed, and at times it's just hard to follow. And I'm concerned about younger audiences, if this is targeted for kids, how they're going to keep their attention and kind of track all the different characters and what's going on. Hey, maybe they can educate me of things that I missed. I would welcome that. But yeah, I had a good time. Like you said, Darcy, I think I was more taken back by the breathtaking animation, and that's really the strength of this movie. So I will also be giving this film a 3 out of 5 immortality pills. And I still think that this is a huge achievement to see a film rooted in Chinese mythology presented on this scale. Like, for families of Chinese background, you know, my wife is Chinese, you know, my daughter's Chinese, you know, to see, you know, this sort of story take place on this scale, I think families will appreciate aspects of this and really take pride in it. You know, it's a piece of cultural history that is just told through stunning animation, and it just makes these legends feel alive for a new generation. So I think that this is still something to be celebrated. But for me, yeah, the story just felt like it was lacking focus. So yeah, 3 out of 5.
Okay. Yeah, the animation is as we're all loving in terms of this movie, it's incredibly solid. And I think it is some of the best visuals, action sequences in animation and on screen in general, in reality. It is just, as you said, Justin, it's an achievement. I think the choreography is so dynamic. The fever dream surrealist sort of style of the world is just something that we don't really have a lot of in Western animation. And so getting to see it here into this scale and to this degree is definitely something to behold on an IMAX screen, I think. You know, getting to have this as sort of an on-ramp for Western audiences to learn more about this mythology and Chinese legends is something that should always be encouraged, like we're saying, and it should be celebrated. And the more we learn about, you know, these stories from cultures outside of our own, and more importantly, we can appreciate the storytelling and perspectives of other people in general, the better. But with that said, I think, you know, well, I don't think any of the themes were necessarily lost on me. I don't think that this story is simple. I think the themes and the general message makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. Like you were saying, Justin, but I think that there's just too many plots. There's too many moments that this movie decides to go in completely opposite, alternate directions. I think they could have gone with maybe a little bit more of a less is more approach when it comes to what they pull from the source material. But again, I can also understand the want to draw from so many amazing stories that exist within this mythology. So I understand that push and pull. It just, the movie's 2 hours and 23 minutes. And like you were saying, Justin, if this is a movie geared towards kids, it's just it's a long time to sit down. So, you know, I think from a plot perspective, I probably would be more in line with like a 2.5 out of 5. I think because of the animation, it really did pull me up to a 3 immortality pills out of 5. And I do think that if I go back and watch this movie subbed, that score could only go up. So I'm looking forward to watching the movie again, maybe at home on a nice big screen at home. I can watch that subbed and pause when I need to maybe take a break or whatever. But yeah, I'm going to be giving this version 3 immortality pills out of 5. But that is it for our spoiler-free review for Ne Zha 2. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you want to share your thoughts on this movie or any of the movies or series we cover, well, let me just have Justin. He's going to use the sky-splitting dragon claw to rip open a portal so he can guide you on your journey and let you know how you can reach us.
Well, they can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or they can reach out to us on Twitter @geekcentricyt. Or they can hit us up on Instagram and TikTok @wearegeekcentric.
Keep in mind, we also have a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-filled discussions for The Fantastic Four First Steps, Superman, Jurassic World Rebirth, and Ironheart. Plus, we also have our most recent spoiler-free reviews out now, as well for films like Freakier Friday, or series like FX's Alien Earth, Marvel Animation's Eyes of Wakanda, Fantastic Four First Steps, Ironheart, and Pixar Studios' Elio. Plus, we also have some great interviews to check out, like our most recent interview with two of the cast members from FX's Alien Earth. Justin spoke with Alien Earth's Sydney Chandler and Alex Lawther about their experiences in crafting their characters, as well as the sci-fi movies they grew up with that stuck with them. And Alex's answer is an interesting one, to say the least. So definitely check that out. We also have a great clip on up on our socials as well. Plus, we have our interview out for Weapons with star Alden Ehrenreich, where he discusses his experience working with director Zach Cregger, as well as what drew him to a genre he usually avoids. So catch those interviews out now, either on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. We're not done, because, you know, August is here, which means not only will it be my birthday at the end of the month, but also that the hot geek summer continues with coverage for all the geeky things you love, like Peacemaker Season 2, as well as our return to Fan Expo Canada, which we're hearing is going to be even better this year. So stick with us. You know, check out our socials. We're going to be covering that convention. And then lastly, yet again, I'm stoked to mention that we here at Geekcentric have been accredited to attend the Toronto International Film Festival this year in September, which, as of this recording, the schedule just went live today. So we're perusing all the different films to see what matches, you know, what we want to cover and what we want to talk about. So when we figure that out, we'll be sure to let you know. You can check out everything we're doing again just by checking out our socials, subscribing to all the things, and join us along the way, because we are Geekcentric and you can be too. Darcy, Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this dragon spectacle of a spoiler-free review. And as we say, love ya.
Laters.
Peace.